Hi, it's Michael Sullivan from Wirecutter, the product recommendation service from the New York Times. And today we're in the kitchen testing canned tomatoes.
Tasting form, sweetness, acidity, definitely the color, the texture.
These tomatoes, they're pretty velvety, like they break apart easily with a spoon.
The guides that we write are living, breathing things.
It's a piece of fruit in a can, so it's gonna change every year. At Wirecutter, we do the work so you don't have to. For independent product reviews and recommendations for the real world, come visit us at nytimes.com/wirecutter.
What's up, everybody out in podcast audio land? It's John.
And Joe.
A few weeks ago here in the office, we hosted a live conversation and concert with Lizzo. The video of that is currently on our YouTube, youtube.com/podcast.
You can watch Lizzo perform four songs stripped down live, including a cover of Meredith Brooks' Bitch, which shares a title with her new album.
Like and subscribe. You can hear the conversation we had and snippets from that performance here in your ears right now.
Thanks for listening.
Welcome to the New York Times podcast, your bad bitch o'clock of weekly culture chat. I'm John Caramonica. I'm the critic.
I am Joe Coscarelli, and I'm the reporter.
I'm Lizzo. I'm the bitch. And, and I'm on Popcast Live.
We're going to jump right into it, but we talked a little bit backstage about a performance that you just did a few days ago, which, if I'm not mistaken, is the biggest crowd you've ever performed to. You were the headliner or one of the headliners at the Houston Livestock and Rodeo Show, which, if you don't know, is a huge multi-day festival that takes place every year. Your set list, which we were looking at, looks ludicrous, frankly. You had Mike
Jones. Paul Wall, not
yes,
ludicrous.
That's true. Paul Wall, Paul Wall, Mike Jones, Slim Thug performing Still Tippin'. You had the Walls Group doing a gospel set. Talk us through the scale of what we have not yet seen, but are going to go look at online later.
It was my Super Bowl. The Houston Rodeo is the biggest thing that you can do in Texas. It's 70,000 people. I was the headliner. Let's just say that.
Okay.
You said one of. I was the. I am not a Vegas showgirl. And, you know, this for me was like a dream deferred that finally came true because it was offered to me so long ago.
And 2020.
Then in 2020. And I was supposed to perform March 13th, 2020. We all know what happened.
Do the math.
We were down there. We were in Houston. We were running rehearsals. And then literally the day before, I got the call that we had to shut down the show. Everyone was evacuating. It was very devastating, not because I wanted to play the show so bad, but because of what that meant for the world. I was like, wait, nothing. If this can shut down the Houston Rodeo, then this is very serious.
And you also have very deep Houston roots.
I grew up in Houston.
Yes, it's a very meaningful city
in Southwest
and
Italy,
a meaningful
Texas.
Event for you.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and I thought that moment would never come back to me because it was such a pivotal moment. I was coming off of the heels of Truth Hurts being a number one song, winning 3 Grammys at the Grammys, and then it was like Houston Rodeo, 70,000 people sold out all for you, homecoming show, and I felt like was a moment that was kind of stopped.
Sure.
And I lost momentum, and I thought I would never get it back, and they called me this past year, and they were like, we want you back, baby, and I was like, yes!
It's time.
So it's time! Mm-hmm. And I wanted to do it, and you know what? I'm glad, you know, because I got more hits. I have more to give. I was like, it's going to be a bigger and better show.
Well, and we're talking about your Houston roots, I think. People who have really been following your career know you have also roots in Minneapolis. You spent some time.
No one knows where I'm from. They're like, where's that the girl from Detroit?
Born in Detroit.
Born in Detroit.
Raised in Houston.
Raised in Houston. And my career took off in Minneapolis.
Right. So yeah. you had this whole career pre-fame as a working independent rapper and musician. You've come from all these different slices of the music world. Like, what did you pick up in those places that helped you become a pop star?
I think that when you're an underground artist, you have to work your fucking ass off. Like, is there any underground indie artists in the building? Because the way that giggle, it's countless nights of just playing shows for like five people, and it's saying yes all the time,
right.
And it's doing any and everything to like get your music to connect with people.
Help me sing it, bitch. I might be better. Turn up the music, turn down the lights. I got a feeling I'm gonna be all right, okay? All right, cause it's about damn time. Turn up the music and let's celebrate.
Playing a festival, I played Glastonbury the first time and there was nobody at my
Were
stage.
Were you like the 1 p.m. kind of
like 11:15 a.m.
Yeah, like
that. It was like 12 p.m. in the clown tent.
Yeah, and, correct.
And you know, you're trying to convince people to fuck with you, mm-hmm. to, you know, and I'm just like, hey, you know, mm-hmm. and getting people to fall in love with you sight unseen and not knowing your music, but having them walk away singing your lyrics. That was always my goal, and that was always my mentality, and I never lost that.
Sure.
And I think when I became a pop star, I just kind of applied that same kind of work ethic, because I know this pop star shit look cute, but my God.
Labor.
They put you through it. I'm grateful.
I always try to tell people it's hard work.
I'm not complaining, because I get to dress up in glitter and shake mm-hmm. my ass and, mm-hmm. you know, and people love it. So mm-hmm. I'm very happy. But when you look at somebody's schedule, like my schedule today started at 6 a.m. and it's not going to end until 9 p.m. And there's no moment unaccounted for, mm-hmm. but I'm built for it.
The contrast point to me is we saw you maybe like a week and a half ago at the Blue Note here in the city. Which is the entire venue is maybe the size of this stage.
Yeah, to this table.
It is a very intimate space. You said something on stage there that really stuck with me. You talked about the importance of playing useful music or making useful music. And I wonder if you can talk about arriving at that as a concept, because I don't know if that's where, you know, 10 years ago, if that's where you came in thinking that you were intending to do. Talk about arriving at that as a concept, but then also, what is it that was useful for you? What are the things that served that function that you now serve for others?
That's a good ass question, Mr. Libra.
That's what we do.
That's a good ass question.
We did astrological signs to make sure that we were compatible to do this interview before.
It's in my contract. I can't. Unless we're both ruled by Venus, I can't do an interview.
We passed.
So I did not start off making useful music. I started off making very braggy, kind of like what I thought rap was. Because, you know, I started off as a rapper.
You're popping your shit.
Because I remember my mom clocked me, because I was writing songs about being tired and on the road and being like, I ain't got no money. And my mom was like, you gonna be tired and on the road with no money if you keep rapping like this.
Wow.
And I was like,
she's like, don't manifest that.
And I remember I had this pivotal moment in my like songwriting life, and I wrote this song about my skin, and it's called My Skin.
I woke up in this and my skin.
And it was the first time I had ever written a song that I guess you would call a self-love song. Back then, I didn't know what that was. It was 2014, you know? I saw how people connected to that particular song.
Yeah.
The other songs were like, you know, batches and cookies. I got my 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 batches and cookies. Got my batches and cookies. I got my batches. I got blah, blah, blah. It doesn't make any sense. No one knows what it means, but it's provocative. And then I would go into this other song, and I was singing it, and it was like, my skin, like I can't change it. I love myself for my skin. And people were crying, and people were emotional, and people were putting their lights up, and I was like, what is this feeling? And I was like, I love this feeling. I love making people feel this way when they listen to this song.
When you wrote that song, was it true?
It was true. That was true, because I had done this interview, the What's Underneath Project. I don't know if you guys remember that, where you take off your clothes
sitting
and
on
you
the
talk
stool.
About. And they were asking me all these questions. Mind you, back in the day, I used to get drunk off tequila and hot Cheetos, and I would just pull up to interviews not knowing what the fuck was going on.
Sure.
That's what we were doing backstage.
Sure, that's,
to this day. And so back then, I had no idea what I was getting myself. I wasn't even wearing enough layers to take off. Because I didn't know what I was getting myself into. I had to take off my wig. Like, that's how crazy it was. I was like, I guess I'm taking off the wig. I had just fallen off a cliff.
Physically.
Like, actually.
Not a metaphor. I fell off a cliff for real. We were, like, jumping into the river in Minneapolis. And I jumped. And, you know, I'm not very aerodynamic.
And everyone's always cliff jumping in Minneapolis. Always.
Everyone else made it into the water. That. Everyone was like, yeah. And it just got, like, deathly quiet because I just face planted. And then I popped off my face and I bounced on my ass. And I just was sitting there, like, shell shocked, and we took a boat to the hospital. But anyway, so I had really damaged my skin, and I remember my friend at the time, he was like, look what you did to your skin, like your beautiful skin. And I was like chill out, like, you know. But I thought about it, I was like, oh my god, I never thought about, you know, how beautiful my skin is. So I was sitting doing this What's Underneath project interview, and I was taking off my wig and my clothes, and they were like, what is your most beautiful characteristic, your favorite thing about yourself? And I was like, my personality, because I had really kind of skated by on my personality my whole life. You know, I'm the funny fat friend, you know? So I was like, yeah, haha. And they were like, no, we mean physical. And I was kind of choked up by it because I've never thought about that before. I never thought about me being beautiful or a part of me being beautiful. And I thought about what my friend had said just like a week earlier, like, look what you did to your beautiful skin. And I started crying and I was like, what's happening to me?
Wow.
And I was like, I guess it's my skin. And I was like, I never thought about it before. And so after that, I was like, I need to write a song about this. And I did. And it wasn't just about like how beautiful the texture of my skin is, it's the color and how people have been oppressed and treated terribly and treated in, like, you know, like an other because of the color of my skin. People have been killed for the color of my skin, but it's still my favorite thing about myself. It's still the thing I'm most proud of. It's this thing that I think is the most beautiful. And so I was living that when I wrote that song.
Connecting with that specific emotional truth, you have two moments of that. It's the connection in the writing and the creation of the song, but then you said seeing what it did to people. Mm-hmm. What did you see reflected back to you?
I saw an opportunity to help people. And I think that when we're making music, we don't think about how we're helping people. You know, like the way that people will walk up to their favorite artist and be like, you saved my life. We don't really understand that. We just sometimes think, okay, thank you, you know, it's a compliment, but that's somebody's reality and truth. And I know that because someone's music has changed my life and has saved my life.
All rolled into one. I'm a bitch, I'm a lover, I'm a child, I'm a mother, I'm a sinner, I'm a saint. I do not feel ashamed. I'm a mess, I'm a queen, and everything between.
I had made a promise to myself that from now on, I was only going to make music that could help people in a positive way. Signing a major label deal to make music that strokes my own ego isn't the point. If I want to stroke my own ego, I can be an indie artist. I was making $1 million on touring indie artists. I was good for the rest of my life. I have a loyal fan base. But in order to be a major artist or a pop star, what am I going to do with that responsibility? And I chose to only make positive music.
And it really worked for a while. You became this.
Excuse me?
we're gonna get
for
into
a
it.
While.
That's what I want to talk to you about. You became this symbol for people of all of these things, pro-black, pro-women, body positivity, etc. And then you've had a turbulent couple of years in the public eye as people tried to tear down, as we do to all of our celebrities, right? We build them up only to dismantle them. You've been the subject of litigation as a boss and a songwriter, some of which is ongoing, some of which has been thrown out. This really punctured, I think, this good vibes, inspirational character and persona that you were putting out into the world. I wonder if you can talk a little bit about how that affected you on a personal level, but also how it affected what character you want to play as a pop star.
That's, you use really, really interesting words, because I think the thing about it is that it's not a persona and it's not a character. It's who I am. Everything that I have shown the world is me. And I think that always puts someone in a vulnerable position. And I think that I'm not friends with a lot of like other famous people or pop stars, but the conversations that I do tend to have, I am one of the few that puts myself fully out there. I think that pop stars have built a sort of protection of themselves, and they put the pop star character in the front, and then the real them gets to sit in the back. And I never did that because I came from the indie world where it was just
you
like
had no choice. You had to put all
this is who I am. Like, I don't have anything to hide.
No artifice.
You know, I love myself, and the world loved me back for it. I think that the beauty of everything is that I get to evolve as a person, and I get to have more depth as a person, because it isn't always happy-go-lucky. And I feel like moving forward, I don't know, it's kind of hard to talk about.
I understand.
Is it hard to share that, even just sharing the struggle, like talking candidly about, hey, I'm not always on like this, just even looking into a camera, you've done IG lives and things like this, and just say, basically, yo, it's real. Like
I'm going through it.
Yeah,
I feel
it's real
this.
Going
like,
through
you
it.
Think it's jokes on the internet, but like I'm a person and I feel this.
Is that hard to share that piece of yourself?
I think in today's climate, I don't think it's appropriate. I think in today's climate, there's so much pain and darkness and people hurting. And, you know, you think of the economy and you think of the government and what's going on. And for me to be in this very privileged position as a successful musician and to go on the internet and pontificate and complain about what's going on with my life, I don't think is appropriate. Personally, I don't. And I think I'd much rather stick to my mission of being someone who can help bring positive change by articulating how I got through dark times. Instead of sitting and lamenting about dark times and hashing it out and rehashing, I can just help people get out because, you know, what happened to me is in the details unique, but not really when you zoom out. Everybody goes through, everyone gets blindsided. Everybody gets hurt. Everybody goes through a dark period. Everyone gets depressed. Everyone, you know, but how do we get through it? And I think that's my superpower. And I'd rather focus on that.
I'm interested in how you're getting through it with your new music, because you had an album you were working on last year, Love in Real Life. You put out a couple singles. You regrouped. You went back to the drawing board. You said, this isn't what I want to do right now. You went back to your roots. You made a rap mixtape. You're doing all these shows. You're getting back to your day job. What did you learn in the meantime that allowed you to try to come back again at that level after these false starts of the last couple of years?
I don't really consider anything I've done a false start. I think that it's 2026, man. Like, the idea of an old album rollout and campaign is just gone. Now it's just about how are you serving, you know, how are you giving? And as an artist, you know, I have the ability to give. Like the fact that I can make not one but two mixtapes in a span of like 2 weeks and drop them because I put a verse out for fun and people resonated it with it. And I said, oh.
Win whammy. Go look it up if you haven't heard it.
Put out a little verse, Yitty on your titties. And and I was like, wow, people really resonated with this. And it was fun for me. Mm-hmm. I can do this in my sleep. Right. And I did. And I think it's more so that. I think that I'm just serving. I think I'm just putting out music. And I also feel like it's important to reflect the times as much as you can. You know what I mean? So I think that even when I put out a song or if I put out a single, if my heart isn't 1,000,000% into it, or if it feels like I'm not really truly reflecting how I feel or the times or the world, then, you know, I can write another one.
Sure. Of course.
I can write another one.
Yeah, you're like, this one didn't work. I'll do it again. This is what I do.
And it needs to work for me.
Right.
You know what I mean? Because, you know, the songs are good. Mm-hmm. The mixtapes are great.
Sure.
I just performed for 70,000 people and they were going, "We outside, ho! Yeah. We outside." I was like, "Oh, you guys streamed. Thank you."
Right. I'm Paul Tenorio. I cover soccer for The Athletic.
And I'm Amy Lawrence. I cover football for The Athletic.
Whatever you call it, the biggest competition in the sport is happening right now. And The Athletic's World Cup coverage has everything you need to follow the tournament.
There's 48 countries taking part, from the tiny island of Curaçao to the five-time champions Brazil. Even if you don't know your offside from your onside, if you're eager to know more about the teams, the matches, all the stories on and off the pitch, we've got you sorted.
Maybe you're the kind of person who's already up early every weekend, waking the neighbors when your favorite club scores. We'll make sure you get equipped with more information, more insight than anyone you know.
We've got more than 70 obsessive reporters on the ground, covering the ins and outs from every game.
I almost forgot to mention the best part, Amy. Free access to The Athletic's World Cup coverage in our app.
Download The Athletic app and see you there.
There's something that I've always been struck by, especially in your biggest songs, where I think you can write really ecstatic music about subject matter that often is not what we would think of as ecstatic subject matter. And sometimes it's really challenging subject matter. And not every songwriter can do that. A lot of times people want the tone to match, the lyrical tone to match the musical tone. But I think that you sometimes take that raw clay of pain, of hurt, of anxiety, and say, how do I make this glow?
I like to call my music like silver lining music. And I think it's just my natural process. And I think that's why you can't write a Lizzo song. Like, AI could never write a Lizzo song because...
Sure. Thank God.
Right. I mean, maybe they can get the beat, but they can't have the same kind of turn of lyric and phrase.
Yep.
Because it's, I use my actual, what I'm saying to myself in the mirror, what I say to myself when I'm rolling back and forth in bed, when I'm humming to myself on the way to the studio to get through.
Sort of like personal affirmation almost. Like,
yeah, absolutely. And I don't really know if there's like a method or a rhyme or a reason to it. I'm trying to think if there's an example of a song where I'm like, well, I'm talking about this really heavy thing. He don't love you anymore, which I think is like a really heavy lyric. And every time in Good As Hell I'm singing that, I'm like, y'all know I'm like, this is kind of fucked up, right? And they're just like, he don't love you anymore. I'm like, okay, you know.
But is there like a take of that lyric that's not as ecstatic? And then you listen to it and you're like, no, it's got to be bigger. It's got to be huge. It has to go up.
If my friend was telling me about a relationship she was in and she was like, yeah, he's doing this. And I'm like, wow, he doesn't love you anymore. Fucking leave.
Yeah,
like,
right.
You know, over. Like.
It's quiet for him.
You know? Yeah. And I think that that's just real good friend advice. You know what I mean? Versus like trying to be like, here's a lyric. Let me make the lyric not so depressing. But I will say on this new album, I gave myself the space to not make myself feel better in the song. There were some songs that I wrote that were sad and the lyric was sad. And I was trying, I was with Ricky and I would be like, and then, but it's gonna be okay. And he's like, well, what if it isn't gonna be okay? And I was like, oh.
And it happened.
I just left it. Mm. And I think that I owe it to myself to do that.
Yeah.
You know, like I was saying, it works for me. This is what's working for me in my life right now. Sometimes a big lesson for me is like, sometimes it's not going to be okay for a while. How do you put that in a song?
And also in your mind, is that also useful in the same way as like rescuing someone from a downer moment?
Yeah, because I've learned that when you are sad or when you're going through it or when you're in pain, you are also on your way to healing. And I think sometimes we want to speed through the healing process. Like I just had a sinus infection It whooped my fucking ass. All through the Blue Note, all through the motherfucking rodeo. And I was in that hacking up mucus and sore throat and achy body. And I wanted that shit to be over so fast, but it can't be. The only way to get better was taking the vitamins, taking the tinctures, taking the time to go to sleep, not going out, not having alcohol. You gotta take that time.
Okay, so we heard you perform the new single at the Blue Note. I saw you sing with Kelly Clarkson. It's nailing a very specific moment from my childhood. It's nailing listening to Tina Turner with my mother in like 1985, 1986, 1987, the Hair era. I wonder if you could talk about, because that's an era, I think, of power pop that conveyed truly heart-rending emotions in these huge, ambitious packages. Yeah. So when I heard that you were going in that direction, I heard that song, I was like, if you're ever gonna call back to a moment, this is a good moment to call back to. Can you talk about the process of deciding on the sound of this? Yes. The sentiment I get, but the sound is like.
You better know what you want. And if it ain't me, don't make me love you. Don't make my heart beat out of my chest. Don't make me want you. If you just want something else, don't you bullshit me, baby. No.
I have a diva for every album era. And because I love you, the diva was Aretha Franklin. And I was just like, what if Aretha Franklin wrote a rap album in 2019? And that was, you know, my that was on the mood board. And then for Special, it was Whitney. And songs like To Be Loved that feel like, how will I know, you know? And then this album, Tina.
That's real.
Is,
Bullseye.
Yeah, she's the one. Like, she's the queen of rock and roll, you know? I feel like the kind of music that I want to make is the kind that I'm able to make. And that is just big vocals, a key change in the final hook. They be complaining on TikTok. They'd be like, they don't do key changes in songs anymore. Yes, we do.
Yeah.
Yes, I got one on every album. Lingerie, To Be Loved, and Don't Make Me Love You.
Yes.
Hello? Hello?
Yeah.
So... And just technically good fucking music with funky bass lines.
Yeah.
And I feel like this song is so powerfully useful. I've heard a lot of people say it's like the Situationship national anthem.
Right. Right. Get it together.
And if you don't get it together, goodbye.
Right.
Okay, I got a witness in the front. So I love singing about love, whether it's self, whether it's cerebral, whether it's to people, whether it's to one person. And this song is most definitely that.
Last question. We saw you perform at the Blue Note. We know you can blow. Do you think you get your proper credit in the R&B conversation?
Ooh-wee.
And rap, for that matter.
In the rap conversation, for sure.
You know, Missy Elliott gave me incredible advice. She told me, you know, if you're waiting to be in those conversations, don't wait, because you're not going to be in those conversations, because you are your own conversation. You're in your own lane. There's nobody like you, and stick to that. That's all you need. And I felt that so deeply. She said it to me so many years ago. This was before everything that popped off. This was, and I was like, huh, I wonder what she means by that. And I didn't really listen at first, because I was like, wait, but I do rap, and wait, I do have the longest running female rap song in the Guinness World Book of Records, but nobody puts me in the montage of female rappers, and I do kind of sing, but that one, that's the one that I'm like, maybe Jasmine Sullivan exists, so I will never say I need to be an R&B goat, but I work really hard on my voice. And then you get to a point where it clicks, and I'm like, I am me. You know, I'm going to go down in history as being me. And that's incredible, because can't nobody stand next to that.
At the end of every episode of Popcast, we always share.
Oh, it's the end?
No, it's, you know.
It's the beginning for you. It's the end for us. These people are not here to see us.
We're going to keep talking. But we always have a snack. We always share a snack. Lizzo looked at our pantry and picked, I really want to be honest with you, this is a devious thing that you picked. We bought this a few months ago at a closeout sale of the It's Sugar on 42nd Street.
Do you want to show the people what you picked?
People have looked at it on our pantry and said, no way. Lizzo said, hell yes.
This is not what I thought this was going to be.
You can't bag out now.
Literally Hostess Twinkies cookie dough jelly beans. I thought it was going to be a Twinkie covered in like little Twinkies. And I thought it was going to be cookie dough flavored.
We're all going to find out together.
Who's to say it's not?
I can say it's okay. not because Let's, these gonna, are clearly
we're
jelly
rip
beans.
This open. I want to. It's not far from what you.
They're cookie dough bites, right? Cookie dough bites.
I'm just going to take a few. Anyone brave enough after the show can come find us. I know, right?
Disgusted.
Yeah.
What the fuck is
You eat
this?
With your nose, I'm told.
I don't.
Can we share with Joe? Or
no, no, it's all you.
No, you're eating
no,
this.
No, you're good. No.
I thought I was going to get out
this
of
this. This happens to us a lot.
These are great. Don't let her tell you
so
otherwise.
Bad.
These are so good.
Yo,
so
what
good.
The?
Yo.
You know candy corn?
I
it's
love
worse.
Candy corn. Love
First
candy
of all, candy corn is great and magical.
These are delicious.
No, this is. Okay, everybody, people eat raw cookie dough, I assume. Imagine it's been sitting out for 2 days.
It's marinating.
It's nailing a very, I mean, me too, candidly.
Yes,
this is our version of the Hot Ones thing where it tastes terrible.
Pass it down.
Pure podcast game, podcast, our own conversation. Lizzo, what a chat. We're very excited. Thank you for being here. And thank you for what you're about to do.
And if you're new to us, every podcast ever at nytimes.com/podcast.
Like and subscribe.
Follow us on YouTube, TikTok, Instagram.